Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 93. And I feel as if we've just killed an old friend. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
Much better now that that's over with.
Great, now he has to include all the outtakes.
My goal in life is to make sure that no matter how much pre-roll is run, Glenn has to include. So I will reference it throughout the show. Remember that time we did that?
Just for that? I'm not putting it in the show.
How was you guys' weekend?
Send an email to Sean to find out what happened.
Oh, dude, it was wet. It was a chimpanzee and a chandelier. And there was a parade.
And the chimp ran into a glass.
Not going there. My weekend was okay until I fell off of a tea box.
Why don't you start then?
So there I was on the tee box playing some disc golf, and I fell off of it. I twisted my hip.
How did you manage to fall off a tee box?
Oh, for those of you that don't play disc golf, normally tee box, at least all the ones I've run into, they're kind of concrete pads,
and they're kind of flush with the ground.
And they should be flush with the ground. The ones here are not.
Always. No, they're not. The Crestwood ones are all raised.
I don't play Crestwood enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the ones out at Lake Shawnee are all raised too.
I need to play disc golf more.
He plays rice. I've been alternating back and forth between kind of just a stand and huck and a kind of run up because I can't really figure out. I'm not good at the run up.
I'm the same way. I've just decided to start standing and hucking myself. Yeah.
With you, it's either spin and huck or run and huck, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. So this one was a run, but I've discovered that I can't run and huck at the same time because if I run, I'm thinking about where my feet need to go, and I'm not paying attention to the huck. Whereas if I stand and huck, I overthink the huck, and I feel like I should be doing something else. So it's a constant fight in my head with it. But this particular one, I was going to run and then huck, and I ran and at the last minute began to think about it. It's like, why am I doing this? I should just stand and huck. But at that point, I was committed. And I put my left foot down and planted it, and then went to put my right foot down and took apparently a much wider stride than I normally would and stepped right off the tee box, which this particular one was raised. And it was only raised about, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches, but it was raised enough that when I went to put my foot down, it didn't go down. It went down and kept going. And my left hip tried to compensate for the lack of floor, and it didn't end well. I fell over and cried out. Mel and Billy laughed, and then they helped me up, and I limped off the course with my tail between my legs.
Did you finish with that hole?
I didn't finish the hole. I don't even know where the disc went.
The disc?
Well, Billy grabbed it later, but I didn't even see where it went. It was just...
That would be insult to injury.
Yeah, not only did I fall down, I...
lost a disc.
Yeah, broke my hip today. So, there was that.
Did you do anything else? Apparently you've never seen...
Okay, so Brother Aaron came into town because now that his home base is here, they've changed his routes a little bit, so he's able to come through a little bit more frequently. So he gave his call, and he's like, hey, I'm going to be in town Friday night. Can we go out to eat? I'm like, no, I'm working, because we had a very long shoot on Friday for our season finale, which we still have 2 episodes to go, which makes total sense when you see TV production. And so he went over to the apartment and you know, went and lay down, took a nap or whatever. He's like, well, can you take me back to the truck in the morning? Because he's got a place to park the truck and then gets a ride around while he's in town until he can figure something out. I was like, well, what time do you need to be back your truck? And he goes, well, I don't know, 5 or 6 in the morning. And we're like, screw that noise. That's not happening. So I was like, tell you what, it's Friday night. We normally, by the time the episode ends and we get done chatting and everything like that, it's normally, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. We'll wake you up at that point and then take you out. Because I'm not getting up 2 hours later to take you. He says, all right, that'll work. Well, we got done with and of course, you didn't show, and I mean, nobody showed. It was just, you know,
me
and Mel and Keith and Sarah. And
again, nobody showed.
Nobody showed. And it was a short one. I mean, visitation's only 4 parts. and they were like,
"I'm sure."
Okay,
well, next week is going to be short.
Yeah,
we chatted for a while.
Well, it didn't seem like it was very long. I don't know. You guys left. And
you overestimated the time you told him.
We completely overestimated because you guys left and we looked at the clock and it was 2 o'clock. And I was like, well, now
we chatted
what?
For at least 20, 30 minutes afterwards.
Like I said, yeah. I don't know how long it is, but it felt very short to
me.
It's
25-second episode. Yeah. Or 25-second. 25-minute episode.
25 seconds? Those are fast. So,
I wonder if that's supposed to...
Then Mel and I were in the, well, do we stay up and play for another half hour or do we just call it? And we decided, you know what, I'm tired, let's just call it and we'll get up, unhappy about that as I am. Okay, so we went to bed and set the alarm for 2 hours later and got up at 5:30 and struggled into clothes and kind of literally I stumbled out in the living room and she comes in and says, he's not in there. I was like, what do you mean he's not in there? She goes, his room's empty, he's not in there. Eh? And she sent him a text and he goes, oh, well, I didn't figure. He says, I got up and figured you guys had forgotten about me. So I called Ron and the other brother came and picked him up and off they went.
Would have been nice.
I would have given Mel one of these. I was too tired. So I turned around and went back to bed. Didn't get up to like 11. So yeah, I slept all weekend, which was glorious.
So you haven't seen Monster Squad?
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
How is that possible?
Oh my gosh.
I can understand Flight of the Phoenix. I haven't seen Flight of the Phoenix.
We caught up with a lot of movies this weekend, too.
We were on a Halloween movie theme this weekend.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's October.
Had a bunch of classics that
well,
I
Well, yeah.
Did you pick up on that?
That's
thing?
A given. Well, it's October.
We're not taking a break from the bonds. We're just kind of integrating these in. And you know. So.
But you guys are pretty close. Are
yeah,
you?
Well, we're ready for...
I didn't realize you guys were in Brosnan already.
Yeah, we're ready for World Is Not Enough. So
I never saw your GoldenEye tweet, apparently.
We only got a few left, but so we watched.
Well, then you missed Tomorrow Never Dies, too.
That's the one I saw.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Because we're ready for World Is
Not
Enough.
Oh, you're ready for World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
Okay, we got you.
What did we watch first? What was the first horror movie we did? Monster House.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't seen.
I hadn't seen that either.
Oh, really? It's cute. It's kind of a little more intense than I would have imagined for a kid's film.
It never seemed very kid-friendly.
Yeah, well, it's
yeah. The reason I've never seen it, we skipped it when it came out because we thought Caitlin would be too young.
She might be ready for it now. I wouldn't let Mason watch it, quite honestly.
Oh, she'd be fine with it at 9. Yeah, he might be bothered by it a bit.
I mean, because it's implied, at least initially, that you know the cranky old neighbor who's screaming at him to get off my lawn and the haunted house and everything, he comes out and he's shaking the kid and screaming at him and lifts him up like this and then has a stroke or something and falls over and it's implied that he's dead, that they killed him. And it's like...
But the kids killed him?
Yeah. The kid is blaming himself for killing the old man.
But he didn't. The guy had a stroke.
I know. Well, they never explain what happened to him. The guy just falls over dead.
Well, and a kid, regardless of how old, can't rationalize that in their mind anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, there was
if I were 9 and some
if
kid
I were 9 and somebody came to shake me and
they died?
And they just died, I wouldn't have thought I killed them.
Well, depending on what you did to cause them to shake
you. He was yelling at you.
I don't
because you were on his lawn.
I know how natural deaths occur. That wasn't my fault.
Anyway, so then
you didn't cause your parents' divorce either. Do you know that, Sean?
Yes, I did.
Keith, you didn't cause your parents to divorce.
I know that. I was 16.
Oh, all right.
Twice.
Maybe I did. I was in puberty. Yes.
You didn't cause your parents to
divorce. I never made that connection before.
Oh, God. 20 years of therapy. Here we come. So, but yeah, like I said, I have to keep kind of reminding myself that it's Robert Zemeckis, and he was one of the executive producers on Tales from the Crypt. So it's that level of scary, which if you watch Tales from the Crypt as an adult, it's kind of like, this is no big deal. In fact, it's kind of subversively funny. As a kid, there were episodes of Tales from the Crypt that scared the bejesus out of me, and I had to keep reminding myself, why am I watching this show? It's on HBO at night for a reason. I'm not allowed to watch this.
We were in high school when it was on HBO.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
But, we watched that, and then I don't know why.
His scare factor tolerance is very low in mine,
I guess. I have a very, very low scare tolerance. Right. Weepy angels scare me, man. Come on. Oh, no, I'm sad again. Damn it.
No. We're not talking that this week. Move along.
Did you go back and listen to the episode at all?
Yeah.
You notice that we kind of skipped over the intro and the plot synopsis of the episode, and we didn't do any of that. We just whew, right into it.
Right into it.
And right over it.
And right over it. and through the other side. Yeah, Monster Squad's one of those that, you know, I'd heard about and heard about and heard about, and I just, for whatever reason, had never seen. So
wow.
We watched it.
What'd you think of it?
It was cute. I think if I had
Could
seen
Could you put yourself in that 80s mindset?
Yeah, very
when
much.
You watched it?
Unfortunately, it felt like a Goonies rip. Is really kind of where I looked at it now. If I had seen it as a kid in the 80s, I would have loved it. It would have been like one of my favorite movies of all time.
A lot of those movies were Goonies rips, so.
Yeah. But it just felt very much like a Goonies, not as well done. But, you know, it was fun. I won't be keeping it. If one of you would like to, you know, have it, you can.
I don't know if I like it that much. Is it the 25th anniversary edition?
Oh, I'll take it.
I was so close to picking up the 25th anniversary edition of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes at CD Trade Post. But it wasn't my. One time I got my mom this really awesome edition of it, and it got stolen, and I want to find that edition again.
You understand that's why your parents are divorced, right?
Why?
You gave your mom a copy of the 25th
anniversary. She loves that movie. Where do you think I get my love for B-movies from?
It's definitely from your mother.
Keith, what'd you do this weekend?
We didn't do much of anything. I broke down and finally bought the Ratchet & Clank collection that I've been wanting for months. Or maybe not months, at least a month that since it's came out.
Are these tools?
No. It's the video game.
Oh! Video game, right.
It's a PlayStation thing.
That's what exactly it is. I forget you are the PlayStation 3 owner.
In your defense,
Sean, I'm sure there was a number of listeners out there that did the same thing going,
it's been 10
tools?
Years. 10 years.
Ratchet and Clank. That's the squirrel. No, not the squirrel. The
robot.
The robot. And, well, that's Clank.
Fox.
Clank.
Clank is
Ratchet. Ratchet is the Lombax.
Lombax.
What's a Lombax?
Lombax. It's not established until later what Ratchet is. But they re-released the first three games.
Back up. What's
a fox?
It sounds like a Dr. Seuss animal. What is it?
It's an alien fox. You want a picture?
An alien fox? So it's not even a real animal.
No, it lives on a different planet. This is all set elsewhere.
Okay. Continue.
They re-released the...
I'm not asking for justification of the video game, because I play enough video games that don't make any sense at all. I'm not, you know...
It's not like...
So wait, I just chase these ghosts around the maze? Okay.
It's not like Sly Cooper where he's a raccoon. It's an alien animal. What?
It's not like Sly Cooper where he's a raccoon. Well, it's an alien fox.
He is a raccoon.
Star Fox was an alien fox, right?
Ratchet is a fox. No matter what you call him, he's a fox. He looks like a fox.
Cartoonized fox. Even more so than Star Fox, I think.
And the raccoon wasn't cartoonized?
Oh, he looks more like a raccoon than Ratchet looks like a fox.
All right. Move along.
Regardless, they for the 10th anniversary, they re-released the first three games, and I finally went and picked it up. Because unfortunately, the PlayStation 3 isn't backward compatible. But played that Saturday night while Sarah worked on some projects, and then today we watched End Time.
Oh, how is that?
Interesting.
I wanted to see that one.
Worth a rental, not worth owning.
How much did you pay for rent it?
Nothing, because I got it from the library.
Sweet, I can borrow it from you.
No, because I've had it for like 5 weeks. I've renewed it twice.
Fail, Keith.
So you can watch it when I return it. It's enjoyable. There's some interesting ideas.
Wait, what's In Time?
It's the Justin Timberlake money. Oh, right, time right. Is currency.
Gotcha.
So it presents some interesting ideas. Some things fall flat. Cillian Murphy's really good in it. Justin Timberlake does a pretty good job in it. The guy who plays Leonard in Big Bang Theory is in it. He does an all right job.
Just an all right job.
Well, he doesn't have a big role. Vincent Carthassiter is in it.
Who the hell is that?
He's Angel's son, and he actually did a decent job in this film.
Is that like a Buffy thing?
Yeah.
Okay, then.
I saw him, and I was like, oh, no. And then he wasn't... You're not supposed to like him, so I was okay with it. Because I didn't, just based on the actor. Glenn, what'd you do?
Worked in... Long, long, long time on Friday. And if you work with me at one job and listen to this podcast, I was sick on Friday.
You were. It was terrible. We couldn't do anything without you.
On Saturday, Caitlin's school carnival, so we went there and did that. And then we had a friend of mine's sister got married, so we went to a wedding Saturday night. Today we did our Disney movie night, a day late.
which was?
This week was Winnie the Pooh, the new one.
How is the new one?
It's good. It's cute.
I need to borrow that.
It's not as good as the original Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, but it's cute.
Is it better than like the Hufflepuff movie and all the thing that came afterwards?
I liked it better than like the Piglet movie, the Hufflepuff movie. I didn't like it as well as the Tigger movie.
I never saw the Tigger movie.
But it's
that's because Tigger
is
awesome.
It's really cute and it sticks to the. It's unlike Tigger and Piglet. They don't do as much of the bookscape where they travel from one page to the other and they incorporate the words and paragraphs. This one actually does a little more so than even the Mini Adventures does. So,
I think. Of course, looking back, that was one of my favorite things about it.
The voice cast is great. Paul Mitchell is still doing Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. Piglet's a different voice that I didn't recognize, but Craig Ferguson is Owl, the voice of Owl.
Ooh,
and,
really?
Yeah. And unfortunately, what's his name that voices Optimus Prime? Peter Cullen is not Eeyore in this one. Yeah, but he still sounded like Eeyore. But yeah, for some reason they didn't get him to do this. And he's done the last several, so. But the other one the narrator is John.
Michael Bay gave him a big head.
the narrator is John Cleese.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, it works in there very well.
And then there's outtakes. There are Eeyore looking at the 100-acre wood folk going, roll out and assemble. Or assemble and roll out, whatever it is.
So
thanks for noticing.
That's all we did tonight. Or this weekend.
Did you do anything fun around this one or just watch this one?
No, we just kind of watched this. The kids, Holly had brought puzzles, Winnie the Pooh puzzles and coloring books, and they did that beforehand. And I went to, we wanted to do a honey theme because there's a lot of honey. This movie really is honey themed. And none of us are really honey fans, except on sopapillas. We love sopapillas with honey. So
okay, what's the sopapilla?
Oh, it's a light, flaky bread, like a fried bread. You get it at Mexican restaurants. It's a Mexican dish.
It sounded.
And it's usually fried bread.
I've seen it on
a lot of times they'll sprinkle it with
brown sugar.
Oh.
Okay. And then you add honey to it. And
so it's a dessert.
It is a dessert, yeah. And
it's dough.
So we wanted a reason to eat honey.
It's fried dough with cinnamon sugar honey.
Well,
is it a sweet dough?
No.
It's just dough with cinnamon sugar.
Honestly, I mean, the mind came up of a fried flour tortilla.
No, it's more of a flatbread type dough.
Thicker. So,
yeah, thicker. Okay. But really good. We love it with honey, so we got that.
almost more the consistency of a wonton wrapper if you really fry them.
Yeah. Depends on where you go, but yeah.
See, that to me is a
some
crusto.
Some of them are more so.
Crusto.
Crustos are mini versions of sopapillas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just never heard of them with honey.
No. And they're usually, when they're fried.
Dude, you got to get the honey for the crustos. Yeah.
They don't usually offer honey at Tortilla Jacks.
They're usually larger, and so the inside is still sort of soft, while the outside has that crusty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go. Crustos. That's very good. That's exactly what a sopapilla is.
It's a shame you guys don't like honey.
You know,
I love honey.
I do. I like honey. I don't like it on my bread or anything like that.
I take honey over syrup. Pancakes, waffles,
pancakes, yeah.
French toast, any of those.
That's a good idea.
French toast, powdered sugar, honey on top. Oh.
I should try that because I've never done that on those. I think I would like it.
And if you'd like any of the recipes discussed on today's show, I do have recipes.
I am not putting those recipes on our site.
Of course, growing up, my pancake recipe was a bit sweeter than I think most. It wasn't Bisquick. It was from scratch and included cinnamon in the batter. Mm. So that might lend to
that's
honey
called French toast.
So Keith will post his recipes on later tonight.
It's from a low sodium book.
All right, well, let's move on to news. Sean, you've got the news this week.
Doctor Who is not on.
Next, feedback.
Oh. Feedback.
Feedback.
we don't have as much feedback as we had last week, because we had a bunch of feedback last week, and we'll never have that much feedback again, because people got tired of listening to us read the feedback, so this week nobody wrote.
I did that in place of the...
Does that mean we're never going to do a feedback episode?
No, we're totally going to do a feedback episode. We're going to start saving
them up. No one will download it.
On the weeks we get
too much... That's what Sean's saying.
No, on the weeks we get too much feedback, we're just going to save one of them.
And then we'll have like a feedback bank. We'll do a feedback show.
We'll do a feedback show. Chrissy wrote from 6 months ago. Hey, guys. Missed your podcast this week.
All right.
Really liked Enlightenment.
First up, Roberts. He says, I want to post my list of classic Who stories for newbies before I forget to. First Doctor. I'd suggest the first episode.
We should have held this for
well, our show. We did discuss it
classic
last week.
Story show.
An Unearthly Child, but not the other three.
Wait a minute. So, Brenda, if you're listening, here's some advice from yes. Roberts.
An Unearthly Child, but not the... other three parts of that story.
Everybody says that.
The other Hartnells I'd go with is Dalek Invasion of Earth. First Companion Departure, Good Ian, Barbara, and Susan sets the stage for much of what the Daleks become. Second Doctor, my choice is Tomb of the Cybermen, since it's a good four-part story. Third Doctor, I'd go with Spearhead from Space, because it's the first Pertwee story. I'd add Terra of the Autons, it's the first Master story, and Three Doctors as well, because, well, Pertwee and Troughton.
And Hartnell is in that one, but very limited.
Yes. Fourth Doctor would be Genesis of the Daleks, then Deadly Assassin, Sunmaker, City of Death, and Legopolis. Those four pretty much sum up Tom Baker era, in my opinion.
Sunmaker.
And certainly the many faces of Tom Baker.
What companion is Sunmakers?
Leela.
Leela, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he's got a Sarah Jane.
Two Sarah Janes.
One companion,
a Leela, a Romana, and everybody else.
Yeah.
Wow, so the rest. He hits the gamut.
What's this and the rest crap?
Fifth Doctor, Earthshock for sure, and Five Doctors. I think season 20 is too linked to choose one outside the Five Doctors. The same goes for Davison's last three stories, though Caves of Adrazani is excellent.
This just in, Keith still hasn't seen it.
I was about to add a here, just because. Sixth Doctor, I think a newbie ought to wait until they're into Classic Who before tackling Colin Baker. You'd have to understand that era first, and then maybe consider the audio dramas before the TV episodes.
I concur.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's actually not a bad idea. Yeah. I mean, and I mean, no disrespect to, obviously, the era, because I've become such a huge Colin Baker fan. But it's really helped through Big Finish. That's really kind of opened the door to those. And I see so much more in the episodes that are televised.
I think you really, though, have to give a new fan one television episode or one television story of Colin Baker, Zarist, just to get the look and the feel of that era.
Just so you know, at least
just so you know what he's wearing.
Which one?
I think Time of the Rani, or Mark of the Rani.
Mark of the Rani.
Yeah, that's probably his best story. Vengeance on Verocide, that was a good one, too.
He's fighting to spit out Cybermen, I can tell.
I'm trying to remember what the title of that Cyberman was.
Attack of the Cybermen.
Was that Attack?
Mm-hmm.
Do I own Attack? I think I do.
I think you do.
So I have to defend that one. My obligation, I have to say that one.
Wait, this is Robert's list, not ours.
Anyways, Seventh Doctor, Remember the Daleks and Battlefield. Not only do I feel they're McCoy's best, but newbies would be able to make connections between them and New Who. That should be enough of a list for you to argue over. I still have a busy month of me, so time to close. Take care and keep those podcasts coming. Robert.
I don't think we could argue with any of those. Those are all probably on our lists of favorites.
Aside from the ones I haven't seen.
Sunmaker surprises me.
Legopolis. Caves.
Oh, yeah, you haven't seen Legopolis either. That's it, though.
That's it.
You've seen all the rest.
and the rest.
It's not that Sunmaker surprises me that it's a bad episode. It's not one that I would have immediately have sprung to mind as a must watch. But I can say it's on the schedule coming up pretty soon. Oh, so good. Maybe we can debate that.
I haven't seen it for so long.
Maybe that's my problem, is it's been so long since I've seen it. It features a planet that's no longer a planet.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right.
Gum. What?
I messed that up,
didn't it? It's set on Alderaan.
Ooh. Wait, how is that possible?
Wibbly wobbly. Timey wimey.
Next up is Ben. Ben sent us in a message via Facebook. He said, just listen to the podcast, another enjoyable show. Thanks for the suggestions for classic Doctor Who episodes, and thanks to Keith for the explanation of what happened to Amy's parents. I must have missed that line in the show.
Thank you, Ben. Sorry, I didn't have Ben's pulled up.
That's
I wasn't prepared for
that. I could tell.
which the reaction of panic on my face? Frequent flip. Nope, I ain't got it.
Or the week-to-week not preparedness of some.
That would make it his fault.
Well, how is that my fault?
Because you should know better than to throw me things.
We go in a circle.
We just started going in a circle.
We've always gone in a circle.
We've always gone in a circle for the intro and the outro. We've never gone in a circle for feedback.
We've never gone in a circle for feedback.
Until we got to the new studio. That is a recent development.
No.
Back me up on this.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I know.
That's the best you got. I don't know.
We've always gone in a circle.
Listeners,
do your research. Go back and download old episodes of this podcast and back me up.
We have two more. Can we read Scott's?
Yes, read Scott's.
All right, Scott from Philadelphia. He had some website feedback.
That's why it's not in front of me.
Hello again, Kansas crew. I originally just wanted to write about the Power 3, but I was gutted to hear the news about Janet Fielding. There's something tragic and bizarre about the way cancer is attacking these former companions. Of course, the reality is that it happens to families everywhere and every day. It's just hitting our Whovian family so hard. My deepest prayers go out to Janet and her loved ones. Do you know of any way American fans can help contribute to the charity event happening in the UK? Okay, let's change the mood. First, let's address that. We don't know right now. I was actually going to look into this afternoon, and I didn't. I wasn't able to. They won't let me. They just won't let me. No, I wasn't able to because of
the
time
damn government and their information blocks.
But Scott, I certainly think we'd something we should look into and see if there's a way that we can at least direct listeners into the way to help out. Because
you could fly to England and go.
Well, yeah, that would be one way. But there might be a way for Americans to reach out as well.
We'll find out.
All right. Okay, let's change the mood. I love the Power of Three. After A Town Called Mercy, I am so glad everyone was feeling better and liked this too. Ha 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 ha.
I didn't know. You know what? Just for that, I don't like it anymore. Town Called Mercy was the worst episode of Doctor Who ever. And let me tell you why. Western. Not really Western. Epic fail.
Scott goes on to say, really, what a love letter to the Pond era. He's referring to Power 3 now. I'm so glad. I skipped back a line. My favorite part was the Doctor and Amy talking outside Unit HQ. This is the episode I'd introduce someone new to Who with, just so they can watch this scene. I tell them that most stories have much more action, but this captures something essential about the Doctor and his connection to his companions. I've heard that this was the last of the five stories to be recorded, and that last scene of the three entering the TARDIS, the last shot. Can you imagine the tears after the doors closed? Possible Keith spoiler. He forwarded this, so he's read it already. Finally, since it wasn't discussed, and I don't know if you're keeping this from Keith, have you ever seen Downtime, the fan-produced story? It features Sarah Jane and Victoria, but the Brig is the star, and it introduces Kate Stewart as his grandson. Kate Stewart and his grandson. This story might make it canon now. Even if it isn't, it's a great story to see. Love the podcast. Take care. No, actually,
We have not. I don't think any of us have seen it, right? Mm-hmm. We know about it. We know about it, its existence. We've never gotten a hold of it, but it's certainly going to be added to the schedule down the line.
I think it's so, yeah, definitely.
Especially it's something that we tackle, and I would agree. I'd like to think, you know, a lot of those that were done, the Auton series, Downtime, Shakedown, a lot of those were done with the blessing of the producers of Doctor Who.
Nice.
A lot of them were done and skirted using some of the names for legal, you know, reasons. But a lot of those were given the blessing, not necessarily the backing or support from the BBC, mm-hmm. but a lot of that was given blessing by a lot of the people involved
kind of
with
a
Doctor
blind
Who.
Eye.
So yeah, so it's sort of a an unofficial canon, I think, with a lot of those spinoffs.
As far as the last Power of Three being the last episode recorded, I know part of it was.
Yeah, I think that's what he was saying.
Yeah,
he's just saying this is
the last bit. I want when that special feature I mentioned watching online talked about that. So yes, it definitely was their last time on set was during this episode.
And then we're going to read the first part of Chrissy's, and then we're going to revisit Chrissy's because we'll do that in between Visitation and the Sonic Screwdriver discussion. She writes, "I wasn't there for Friday Night Who, so I don't know what the consensus was for the Visitation. But it's always been a favorite of mine. It's not quite as good as Snake Dance, which is the one that I completely love, but enjoyable nonetheless. I always get a kick out of Richard Mace. He and the Doctor are a great pair. Tegan actually has a few good moments, and Nyssa is brilliant. Adric is irritating as usual. It's a nice mix of historical events and alien invasion, and a story that I just have fun with." And we're going to stop there, and I didn't read her title of her email on purpose, guys. So
okay, yes.
All right.
Well, let's move on to the Visitation.
So, the Visitation.
Just for the record, we did not go in order on that feedback run.
No, we didn't.
Just saying.
What do you mean?
Wibbly wobbly, Sean.
In order of how
we
they came in?
We did not go in order.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, because you weren't ready.
You weren't paying attention the second time. We were going to give you Chrissy's.
I was paying attention. You just launched into it under the assumption I wasn't ready.
So you were.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to be ready to read the second half.
Actually, we've just taken all feedback away from Sean, and you and I will read them from here on out.
All right, sounds good. We've come a long way from you don't want to read.
Sean, you're grounded.
Going to my room.
Not before you clean it first.
Oh, and man. The dishes.
Wait, how do you not before you clean your room? If you're going to,
I have to go to my room to clean it. Yeah. Dad.
The Visitation. An attempt to return Tegan to Heathrow Airport fails, and the Doctor and his companions find themselves in 1666 England during the darkest days of the Great Plague. As they venture into a land gripped by fear and mistrust, they soon discover they are not the only new arrivals. Strange lights have been seen in the sky. The Grim Reaper stalks the local woods, and evidence of an advanced alien technology is all around.
Did I say the Grim Reaper?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it, yeah, kind of was.
He was dressed as the Grim
Reaper.
That.
What?
He's only on the cover, Glenn.
It looks so little like the Grim Reaper that I've never really associated that, but yeah.
He doesn't have a scythe.
But somebody else did.
He also has, like, elephantitis of the face. I mean, look at that. You're not right.
I'm sorry. Looking at this, I kind of... And, well, I knew they were going up against death.
It had to fit over his bling.
Yeah, it did.
The bedazzled robot. Or android, I'm sorry. Any dun-dun-duns?
Dun-dun-dun. I can't get overly excited about it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Chrissy. Don't hate me.
It was...
Parts, I think it's a fun story.
It is a fun story.
Parts of it were fun.
There's a lot to like here, but...
Chrissy always seems
there's
to...
There's a lot to poke fun at, too.
Chrissy always seems to be in line a lot of times with her reviews as to how I feel about a story, too. I'm going to point to the fact that I really enjoyed
Mace and the Doctor. I thought they were.
Yes.
So they Mace were is the highwayman.
Really yeah, the highwayman. That,
okay.
That, initially, he's going to rob them, and then.
Did you just flip your hair?
My hair looks so wonderful in this scene.
It was Jonathan Mace? Is that what his name was? Richard Mace.
I'm assuming that's the actor.
Pretty common name. No,
that's his character?
Name. Yeah.
That's the character's name.
I don't know who the actor was, but...
Continue.
I took a piece of fish in my mouth. I don't know why I did that. That was stupid.
All right, Keith, you lead us off. What'd you think? okay.
There were enjoyable parts to this story. I think the Doctor was enjoyable. I think Nyssa was enjoyable. Tegan's
never enjoyable.
Hey,
this was some of her worst.
Seriously, the more I watched this was some of her worst. The more I remember that I don't like her.
This is some of the worst I've seen Tegan. And the fact that she even makes fun of herself about it is telling of her character. And while it's tragic that the actress is going through this battle, one of her characters will never be one of my favorites.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I mean, I don't hate her. She's certainly low on the list of companions that I care to watch. But
when watching her, you say, ugh, why are you complaining so much? I know she's wanting to go home, but all she does the entire story is complete.
Now, you have to feel a little bad for her because she's on her way home, essentially.
But then at the beginning, doesn't want to leave anyways.
Well, she is a little wishy-washy about it. But they're on her way home, and then she's mad because it's the right place, just the wrong time.
And I can understand that, but all...
And did you notice
that anger the hint I can of understand.
Glee in Adric's voice... When she said, we're in the wrong place. He goes, no, it's the right place. We're just 300 years early. he was just really happy to jab that in there a little bit.
Which really...
Adric was quite annoying in this, too, I thought. But anyway.
I didn't think he was that bad.
Yeah,
he was.
There were parts.
Well, and even Nyssa. I was trying to defend her during Friday Night Who. I was trying. Because Sean was... Why are you rearranging the bedroom and making the bed when there's this giant threat? And she needs room for the giant thing that she has to test to make sure it works in order to kill the thing. I don't know either.
None of the
companions do logical things in this
story. The whole crux of this argument, and I feel bad again because I want to like Nyssa. She's the most likable of this group, and so I always want to try and find things. But so often in these stories, we get exactly what happens here. We get Richard Mace who comes in, and he's phenomenal. He's a lot of fun as a guest star, and he's cool, and he's this, and he's funny, and he's witty, and he's having some trouble grasping the whole what, but he's kind of along for it. And then we go back to the companions, and it's like, why are you here?
Yeah.
What are you bringing to the table? You're just not providing things. So then Nyssa gets this great moment to do something science-y. And we send her back to the TARDIS, and... Oh, never mind the fact that, you know, Adric has, been captured or lost or whatever, and Tegan definitely has been shot and is presumed in a state of unknown at this point. We have to go get this thing and destroy the robot. Okay, so she goes running back to the TARDIS, and we cut to do something else, and then we come back to her, and she's rearranging the furniture in her room. She's got the bed. She's sitting on the bed, like, patting it down, like she just got done making it. And he gets up and pushes the bed up against the wall. And then she goes over and grabs another bed. Now, why she has two beds in her room, I don't know. But she pushes another bed up against the
wall. And why aren't they bunk beds?
Wait. I always got the impression that Tegan and Nyssa were bunking in the same room.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In the TARDIS.
Because there's another time that I thought we saw Nyssa's room and there were two beds. And that was my first... I mean, that was the first time I thought... That they must share a room. The girls together.
That brings
one room,
up a bigger
gets
issue.
His own room.
Infinite dimensions and
I'm not saying it's logical. I'm just saying I've always assumed that.
Okay, maybe they do. I don't know. So she's in there. She's rearranging the furniture, and it's like, are we not on a time crunch? I've been there. I've been like, I'm going to double park the car. And run up to the apartment to grab something. And I run up, and I fly open, and I leave the keys in the door, and the door's wide open, and I'm rummaging through the junk drawer looking for a flashlight or something, and it's... And I find it, and I leave the drawer open, and I run back out. And then back up and slam the door and lock it again.
No, you don't. You run upstairs, you rummage through the junk drawer, then you realize that Keith didn't wash his glass, so then you wash the glass real quick.
I do
you
not.
You dry it out, you put it in the cupboard, then you run, you're getting ready to walk outside, and you look down the hall, and Mel hasn't made the bed. So you run down, you make the bed real quick.
I'm not.
No, I've seen your apartment. You don't do that.
I'm not a bed. I am not a bed maker. I think it was Jim Gaffigan who once said, "What's the point? I'm going to wind up back here tonight anyway." It just smacked of. What are you doing? Are in danger. Why are you making the bed? And Keith was like, "Well, she's got to have room to test this whatever." Okay. So then she goes into the console room. And
I was justifying her moving the bed. I wasn't justifying her making the bed.
She grabs something and drags this generator across the floor. And it is as uncomfortable as Will Smith grabbing that table in Men in Black. She is dragging this thing across the floor and is going... and she gets it all the way into the room. And then sits down on the bed because she's exhausted. It's just like... Oh my God! The aliens have won. I'm sorry, Nissa, you are too late. She showed up to the party with the ray gun, and it's like, why did they take over the planet? When did this happen? But meanwhile, Adric is falling over every tree root in the forest, getting beaten up by villagers, menaced by the robot. And pretty much making himself as useless of a companion as possible.
Well, he makes it back and helps her finish the sonic cannon.
No, he doesn't. He lures the robot back to the TARDIS, and she takes advantage of it to test it. Now, this is the real genius of this plan. I've moved all the furniture out of the way. I've constructed this thing in the middle of the room. It takes up almost as much room as Richard Dreyfuss's model of Devil's Tower in Close Encounters. This thing is huge, right? There's no way she's going to carry this thing through the woods back to the house to kill the robot. But and lucky for us, Adric brought it with him.
And however the doctor thought he was going to bring it to the...
I know! What was he thinking?
I guess he thought he would pilot it, but then knowing the doctor... He wouldn't be in the right time zone.
This is one of those instances where, you know what? This would have come in really handy.
And unfortunately, it gets destroyed.
Because they could have... Go back to the TARDIS and get me a booster pack. And we plug it in the bottom of the Sonic and go... And the robot blows up. I could have lived with that. I've been all right with it. Because it was doing... He even calls it a Sonic Disruptor. This is what we've built. Okay.
Sonic Cannon.
It.
Which I thought was ironic that we destroyed the... destroyed the sonic screwdriver in this episode because the producers think it's become a crutch. But and we go back to the sonic cannon. Well, at least it's what it does and what it says it does, I guess.
And her earmuffs.
My dad had a pair of those. We used to listen to his hi-fi.
These big old fur covered. They were bigger than her head. It was like, you see those photos of babies when people put them in the chair and they put the dad's headphone speakers on them and they completely swallow the kid's head. It looked like that on her melon. It wasn't just... Now, that's the nitpicky. That's the parts of it that I'm complaining about. And overall, the story was fun. The setting was fun. Like I said, I loved the Highwayman. He was fantastic and a lot of fun. And he had great hair.
What'd you think of the... I'm going to forget the name of the alien.
I just looked it up.
Terriptyl or Terriptyl?
Terriptyl.
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 Yeah, okay. Whatever that
is. I think I tweeted during Friday Night Who that it looked like the Merca had a baby with a sea devil or a Silurian.
I don't think it was consensual either.
The Merca had its hand.
Merca forced itself on that poor sea devil. This is one of those examples where I'm fine with
this
the design.
It's easy
it's a big, ugly fish thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Reptile.
But this is one of those that the foam rubber lips didn't really work all that well.
This is the first story. The very first story they used animatronics. So there was actually...
Oh, was there?
Yeah, it was actually a motor or mechanics in there that were operating that mouth. So this was their first attempt at an animatronic.
It moved better than Kermit's mouth does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and then when it finally turned around and I realized that one side of its face was all you know,
to well, that, that was a huge reveal.
It was a huge reveal. It's like, oh, because the moment it was kind of like, did you not finish the puppet? Oh, he's battle damaged. Okay. That's really cool looking. It's gross, but it's cool. But then his mouth would start to move again. It's like,
We don't judge production quality.
No, but and this, again, this is how you fix it. This race is suddenly telepathic.
like the Silurians. Well,
put a flashing bulb on his head. And like, why did they not think of these things? Here's what we've got. Fantastic. We're going to voice project from now on. He's going to be off stage. Put the guy in the suit. He don't talk. Save all kinds of money on the animatronic mouth. We don't have to mess with it.
And you were wowing over the android. And this is another Doctor Who android robot I'm not impressed by.
Quite frankly, I'm not impressed by this robot either.
Especially after Androids of Death. Right?
Robots of Death.
Robots of Death.
Robots of Death.
Please do not throw hands at me.
Yeah, this one. This, after those robots and androids.
I was sitting there going, that's... It's not Androids of Death, but what is it? And then I about went Android Invasion. And then I realized...
Androids of Tara, Robots of Death. I combined the two.
But not Robara.
What was Androids of Tara? Well, that was one of the Key of Time.
Key of Time ones. You know,
the Android Invasion was the one with...
Yes. Don't throw hands at me. That's what I'm thinking.
No, that's Robots of Death.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Android Invasion is the one where they duplicated the Doctor and Sarah Jane in the town.
Yes.
Okay. All
right.
Right.
Regardless, after all these previous... After Robot, other good robots that came along. This is kind of
robot,
a...
Man.
Really? I'm sorry. I'm not going to be scared by a bedazzled robot.
I wasn't wowed by him. I was wowed by how bad he was.
Okay, good.
This really this should have been an indicator. This was the precursor to Colin Baker's coat, and we should have.
Yeah, we should have.
We should have went. Uh oh. I called him Robo Harlequin on Friday Night Who, and that's what I was impressed with. Oh my God, Robo Harlequin is coming toward you. Robo Harlequin has a gun. Robo Harlequin opened a door. Robo Harlequin did this. I mean, it was just, and he just. He lumbered, and he kind of shuffled his way across the stage, and then he would turn around, and it was like, ka-ching! I was like, oh my God, I'm blind.
And even with the cloak and the Grim Reaper mask, he'd stick his hand out, and you'd be blinded by the hand before you ever got shot.
Like guest performance by Michael Jackson. What's with the glove? And then he would moonwalk off stage. And we went, wow, that's a cool robot.
I would have been more impressed then.
And he didn't do the robot at any point in time. That would have been cool. You know, but...
Android, are you watching? Are you watching? Sorry.
We're being very unfair to this episode.
We didn't hate it.
We didn't hate it.
But he hated it.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't hate it. There were large chunks I was bored through. I didn't hate it.
This is one of those episodes that could have been two bars.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
There is a lot of dragging moments in this one. I do like the wall. I like the what do you call it?
Oh, that was very cool.
The holographic wall was cool.
Yeah, that was neat. I thought the effect was really cool when he walks through it, too, for being, you know, early 1980s.
Despite the very Lang resolution to the first cliffhanger. Doctor! Yes?
He sticks his head through.
Really? I waited a week for that?
Again, the effect was cool, though, because it didn't look... very obvious blue screen, green screen, whatever. It was just kind of him with this weird, you know, transparency there, but not. Yeah. It was, I thought it was impressive. And then it wasn't just a in out as so many of these holographic doors are. You can be on this side of it or this side of it, but don't languish in the middle. And he just kind of hung out there. So, you know, here I am halfway through a brick wall. And I was like, that's kind of cool looking. But,
and then they didn't keep it around for very long.
No,
there was the door, the panel that they...
Well, between spending the money on the jewels for the robot and that doorway, we didn't have enough left for the Terrapin. So we had to... We got ugly fish mouth, so...
Terrapital.
I'm sorry, this has to go down as one of the worst monsters. Aliens.
Really? I didn't think they were all that bad.
I didn't think they were all that bad, but... I mean, they were ugly, but they weren't...
I think there are some that are there are a lot that are a lot
have
better.
You seen the Vervoids yet? You haven't seen
No. He hasn't seen the Vervoids yet.
You and, haven't seen the Zygons.
No. Of course, granted, okay, from my experience.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's why I'm worried now. Did we get up? This was bad.
Did we get them all out of the way early? Maybe. And then when he's going out for his night on the town, and we're driving to London, and he puts on his traveling cloak. You're not fooling anybody. You are a giant ugly fish in a traveling cloak. And a humanoid fish.
If anything anthropomorphized, this was one of them.
No. With a blinged out robot.
It was like it was a cross between a reptile and a fish and a what's it? I mean, it wasn't an anthropomorphized anything.
It was a rainbow trout. Rainbow trout. With a rainbow robot.
This story does do something that I think a lot of Davison's era does that I really like. Is tying it into historical events. Fire of London.
The Fire of London starting.
How many...
Was it Pudding Street?
Something like that.
Pudding Lane.
Pudding Lane, yeah. At the Tavern of Pudding Lane.
Not even knowing anything about the Fire of London, I know that's an actual event. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's always cool.
It was a neat little tie-in to... Which is interesting because
it seems that
the Fourth Doctor at some point mentions that he was mistakenly blamed for the Fire of London. And I can't remember what story it was. And I've always thought, ooh, that was cool that they went back and did that. And then I thought, well, that's out of order. They can't really mean that.
Yeah.
But I think it's because somebody blamed the Doctor for it happening, but he didn't know that he was going to cause it yet. Ooh, so I thought that was kind of a neat.
Or maybe maybe he just happened to be there and people mistakenly blamed him for it, and then the Fifth Doctor shows up. He knows this is going to happen, which is why he's like, we're just going to let it run its course, because he knows he's going to get blamed for it.
I'm going to get blamed for it anyway.
He's not going to bother fighting it.
We're not going to bother fighting this one. How come? Well...
Which seems to happen more often and not than in Davison's era, in my mind.
What?
The
what
historical
happens?
Tie-in.
Oh,
With the ones you've seen.
Yeah, so far. Because we had The Earthshock is one of the biggest examples, the explanation for the extinction of the dinosaurs. There's the one that is the explanation for the Big Bang, and I can't remember the
that was Baker, actually.
No, not Big Bang. It was Nisa's last one.
Enlightenment.
Enlightenment.
Terminus.
Terminus. That's it.
Yeah. The middle one. Terminus. Yeah.
Oh, that was in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Terminus.
Well, I mean, it's her last one, but it's in the middle of that set, right.
Terminus. So that was, the result of those effects in that were what created the Big Bang. And then this one. I can't think of any other stories.
Something mild in Black Orchid, or was it just a...
No, Black Orchid's the exception.
Yeah, it was a...
It's just a historical set.
Yeah,
please.
It's just set in historical times, but I don't think it was actually tied into anything historical.
The big moment for me in this that I just wowed over was the fact that Adric, who's a complete wuss about everything, manages to convince Nyssa, very logical, very straightforward, very this is what has to happen. And even when she sees him on the scanner get set upon by the highwaymen and the bandits and the villagers, and she goes to the door, and then she goes back to the control panel to open the door... And then she stops and closes the door back up. And she doesn't go rescue him. It's like, this is how dedicated to the mission that this woman is. And it goes a long way to that, you know, really fantastic companion mm-hmm. status. Yeah. But when he manages to convince her, let's take the TARDIS and we'll hop over to the, you know, and rescue them. And we'll just fly across the county and land over there in the house. It's like, of all of the misadventures that we've had in the Fifth Doctor's era, of all of the attempts to get Tegan home to Heathrow and winding up somewhere else, really?
Well, and the fact that they think they don't do it at first, but they have, and then they do something else, and then they actually land.
It's not until he hits the console that it starts working. Any time that, the console, the Doctor seems to be able to pilot the TARDIS fine in Davison's era. It always seems to be an event that causes them to be sent to the wrong. This one happened to be, they explained it at the very beginning. Something happens that pushes them back to 300 years, and I can't remember exactly.
You know, there's a lot of that that goes on, and I'm still on the fence as to whether or not these are actual events.
Or he just says it
or
to be
he
an
just
explanation.
Says it
for, well,
to give them an explanation.
That's a good point. I haven't
especially
thought of
if
that.
You look at the way Davison delivers those lines. He says, "Oh, it was probably just a faulty circuit, or it was maybe this, or it was maybe that, or blah blah blah." And he kind of fluffs over it, and then let's go out and look around anyway. But like you get to Colin Baker, and something happens, and literally the console blew up.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Well, don't blame me. It was because of blah blah blah."
Right.
And there usually is an event there.
That's
with
true.
Davison, I'm still on the fence as to whether or not he can pilot it or not. Because
that's a good point.
There are times when he can. There are times when he nails it right on and we're okay. And then there are other times when he winds up and it's like, where the hell are we? I don't know. Just didn't mean to be here. Should we leave? Yeah, probably not a bad idea. But I'm going to go out and look first. I don't know. But just the fact that Adric, who, like I said, he's completely ineffective at everything he does. Unless it's a math book. But, you know, he manages to talk her into this, that this is the right course of action. I was floored. I was just like, are you kidding me? You're actually going to get in the... You pushed a button? Oh, God! And it was, you know, and then it's that sputtering, maybe it's going to get there, maybe not. And the doctor kind of has that look like, oh. Like, he's not sure what to root for.
Right, right.
You know, am I happy to see that they did this, or am I suddenly going to be crying because my ship is going to spin off into the vortex and I will never see any of these people again? Not to mention the ship. You know? And then it shows up, and his reaction is not elation or happiness, or it's,
how dare you touch my automobile. Which, now not only can River and the Doctor and Romana fly it, but Tegan and... Or not Tegan, Nisa and Patrick can also fly the TARDIS now. So add that to your number of people who can fly the TARDIS. Somewhat.
It had kind of me fist pumping the air when it finally materialized. It's like, yes, I'm rooting for Adric, damn it. So there were a lot of things to like in here.
There are a lot of things.
It's enjoyable.
There's... just if I were to nail him down, the monster isn't great, but I like it. There are parts of it that drag, but overall, I thought it was an enjoyable story. I mean, it's not a bad story. I do like the crux of what we're centering this episode around, and that's the sonic screwdriver and the fact that this is the last time
that
anyone saw the sonic screwdriver until the TV movie.
Yeah.
Like 10 years later.
Well, and it got quite the ceremonial death.
Well, and you know what's funny is I didn't think so. Because this is like another one. I hadn't seen this episode, but I'd read the book. I read the novelization. And I remember being shocked and outraged and just aghast that they blew it up. I mean, he just and lasers it and it demelts and Davison delivers his lines. And I remember as a kid thinking, that's one more reason for me not to like you. How dare you let that happen to the sonic screwdriver? It was cool. You know. And then watching the episode, it was like, that's it? That's all the moment we get? I in my head, I remember this being such a bigger moment.
You know why?
And it isn't.
This probably wasn't so ceremonious. Is there was supposed to be a scene at the end of the episode where Davison goes into the TARDIS and goes into a room and he opens a cabinet. And there's a whole line of sonic screwdrivers.
Really?
And he was to grab another one and put it in his pocket. And the idea was that he just had backups all the time, so this wasn't such a bad thing, despite what he says there. And the producers at the time, I think it was Barry Letts on this one. Maybe it was somebody else. Because J&T later is the one that did
J&T was producer on this one.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So then it was J&T on this one that said that he thought that the sonic screwdriver was being overused, so they cut that scene from it entirely. And from then on, no one was allowed to use the sonic screwdriver. That was the end of the sonic screwdriver.
If they had any idea.
Well, that's just it. For the rest of the classic era, until the movie, there was no sonic screwdriver. It was never used on camera again. So
do you guys think it was used more in Fifth Doctor, beginning of Fifth Doctor, or is it more of
End
of
Four? I don't recall it being used that much in...
I've looked at a list of usage, and it's not that very often
Davison's
in...
Era.
Classic Who in general.
Well, no, for the most, it's certainly not. I mean, if you compare it to New Who, no, absolutely not. But I mean, I think it was probably used more in Pertwee's era, even than it was in. Well, no, it was used a bit in. It was probably Pertwee and Tom Baker's era that it was used the most. So,
which is interesting because, according to the source of all knowledge,
Wikipedia.
During the third Doctor's tenure, producer Barry Letts was adamant the device not become a cure-all for the series,
right,
and limit its use to avoid writers becoming over-reliant on it. This is followed up with, during the first 3 years of the fourth Doctor's tenure, producer Philip Hinchcliffe further reduced the use of the sonic screwdriver. Exceptions include Robot, which when it was used to detonate mines, and the miniature sonic lance to cut a lock.
Right.
But aside from unlocking doors, the device was greatly downplayed during the fourth Doctor's second and third
seasons.
Well,
that's what it was used for in Tom Baker's era. I remember him unlocking locks with it all the time.
But it did see a resurgence during when Graham Williams took over in 77.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I mean, they even make a big deal about it because, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. But Romana, when she makes hers in City of Death, and then later... when the Doctor wants, tries to swap in, was it Horns of Diamond? Is that the one where he tries to do the old switcheroo and switch with Romana?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's... Yes. Yeah. So, we're going to get into that later, but we have some...
To be fair, according to TARDIS Wikia, it's the same amount of use. There are 12 instances in Third Doctor and Fourth Doctor of use of the sonic screwdriver.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it was, but that's why I remember it being used most in
three, because three it's and more.
Four. Well, I remember it in three and four. So.
Well, three would be a bit more compact because it's less
Certainly, but Baker was 7 years and that was unusual for anybody. So, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, can you really count number of sonic uses during, there's 7 years?
Yeah, I don't think so. But maybe that's why it seems perfectly as
more. Oh, Tom Baker used it more than anybody else. Well, he was on the air longer.
Yeah. He's saying it was 12 and 12, so it would have seemed that the third Doctor would have used it more often.
Because there were only 3 years. How many times did Matt Smith use it?
Anyway, we're going to talk about the sonic screwdriver in a little bit. You guys got anything else to say about the Visitation?
Despite my complaints, I did like it. It falls down for me in a lot of ways that a lot of Fifth Doctor stories fall down, where we've got kind of an interesting nugget of an idea, but it never really seems to get developed, and we wind up spending way too much time doing the running about, introducing people, and shuffling the companions off to go do something else that we don't seem to get in some of the other stories. And maybe that's just because of the Full House TARDIS.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people point that out, that there's just... too many people in the TARDIS, too many companions. And I've always been on that side of, I just thought there were too many people and there were too many companions at this time.
Well, and then they bring in the guest star companion for the episode.
Yeah, exactly, because then we get Mace in this one, who becomes, one more companion. I think if they had pared back by one, they obviously they get rid of Adric, they dispatch of Adric later, And then we get rid of Nyssa as well. But I think if they had just pared back and just had two companions in the TARDIS with the Doctor and had somebody different each way, like Mace or somebody else that came along and became kind of a quasi-companion for that episode, it wouldn't have been such a bad thing. But when you've got the three of them already, then you introduce the Highwayman, then it suddenly becomes very crowded.
So yeah.
There's a,
becomes the Doctor's gang.
I was just got a gang. His comment. I've never had a gang, and I wanted to scream. Yes, you did. All Fifth Doctor era was a gang. It's a whole gaggle of companions. I think they've kind of figured that out because I'm reminded of Boomtown, where we've got a couple episodes with Rose and the Doctor and Captain Jack, and then we throw Mickey into the mix in that one, and all of a sudden it's just one too many people. And I think two is kind of the optimal number of. If you're not going to do one, you can do two. But okay, I think three is, three just becomes a bit too many things to juggle.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's Brian.
Well, but again, that's... No. Here's the thing, though. That goes along with my point, where if it had been Nyssa and Tegan, or Nyssa and Adric, and you added the one shot, or even two shot, Brian kind of becomes... then it's okay, because you're not running around all the time with that many people, and you've got a fresh person in there, which is what makes the Brian so lovable, is it's that new, it's kind of that, added.
Somebody different.
Well, it's the inclusion of Mickey. It worked for that episode, but he didn't hang out for the next one.
Right, exactly. So. You get rid of him.
Which, I'm double checking, but two more episodes and then Adric's gone anyway.
Right. Yeah. Our shock follows very, very soon.
Really, six episodes.
Because after this is Black Orchid and then Earthshock.
Right. Yeah. So I've seen another three.
I feel bad that you still haven't seen Kinda yet. Because that was what preceded this one.
Which
they make reference
that's
to.
That's the other thing.
Tegan seems absolutely devastated
by it. She talks about her possession. So.
And I think that will probably...
That might elevate the story
I think definitely that will color our perceptions a little bit of why Tegan is the way she is in this episode. Once we go back and watch the preceding
it
one.
Certainly does.
It's going to make... And that's the other thing, I think, that not since, you know, really the first and second Doctors do we get this kind of really continuity story arc that runs through these things, where, I mean, it's...
Well, Davison seemed to be... I mean, we have the Key to Time season. We have the East Space Trilogy, which kind of have a linear feel
but
to them.
But both of those, while... Overalling story arc encompassing those things, realistically, they're still individual episodes within the... I mean, yes, there's some business at the beginning and end.
Yes.
These really seem to kind of carry through almost soap opera style week to week to week.
Yeah, this is certainly the most, I think, that we had, at least since the first Doctor's era, where they were literally doing that, where they had just come off of an adventure, and then suddenly we're in our next adventure and referencing our last adventure. So,
did anybody think the open was a little off? That we open in this house in the 17th century. And
no, it was 1666.
It's 17th century, 1666.
Yeah, okay. So we open this house, and we've got the guy, and he's drank too much wine, and the son's cleaning his guns, and he's mad, and the daughter's doing whatever she's doing, looking at the window, watching fireworks explode over, you know, this town that's not there yet. And it just kind of felt like, did I put the right disc in? Are we watching Doctor Who? Because it just...
And it went on longer than it seems like it should
have. Yeah, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're under siege and they're shooting guns off and everything. And, it, you know, obviously that's the house that they set themselves up in.
Yeah.
But it just kind of felt like it was very removed from everything else that happened in the episode. Well, I don't know, maybe that was
quite
just
frankly,
me.
Quite frankly, I also felt like it wasn't needed. I mean, we get the idea that they have basically taken over a house... Later on, that's kind of discovered by the Doctor. So it wouldn't have hurt for us to have discovered that point of the story later. We didn't really need the setup that these were the people that lived in this house before it was overtaken by the Pterolepitals. So,
but anyway, I still think it was an enjoyable story. So don't hate me, Chrissy.
Let's move on to our discussion of the Sonic Screwdriver.
Before we begin, we have feedback about the Sonic Screwdriver.
Yes, we do.
From?
First up, we're going to finish Chrissy's email.
And the title of Chrissy's email is, It Doesn't Do Wood. Since we're going to have a big throwdown over the Sonic Screwdriver, I'd better put in my 2 cents. Excuse me. I like that the Doctor has this little weird alienish tool on hand to do minor little things like unscrew screws and pick locks and resonate concrete. Which, did that last one ever really work? However, I think they need to have a set number of things the Sonic can and can't do and stick to it. For example, it doesn't do wood until it's a bunch of sticks and rocks around an old West Town.
But it didn't do anything to that wood.
It didn't do anything to that wood. I don't like that she goes there because... Yet that was the point, is he pointed it at it. It didn't read anything because it doesn't work on wood, and so it was sticks and wood.
Yeah. It scanned it, maybe.
For example, if they give it too many things that it can fix, then it becomes too powerful, and then you run the risk of solving problems in your story way too easily. Or you have people wondering, why didn't the Doctor just use the Sonic Screwdriver to get out of that mess? They don't need a ton of rules, just a few basic things the Sonic's capable of, and just use it as a basic tool for the Doctor to accomplish whatever his nutty Time Lord brain thinks of. I don't mind that Eleven has used it to scan things and find out what they are. It saves a lot of plot explanation, and that talking stuff's just boring anyway. It would be interesting to have one instance where the Doctor uses the Sonic to do a scan an alien, and the Sonic has no idea what the alien is. So the story winds up being about the Doctor discovering what the alien is. Or to have a story where the Doctor forgets the Sonic back at the TARDIS and really needs it, but he can't get to it for one reason or another. There are a variety of things writers could do with this if they really wanted to. Anyway, that's my contribution to the conversation. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go for popcorn for this epic debate between Glenn and Keith. It had better be good. Goodness knows you've teased the heck out of it the past few weeks. Chrissy.
I'm sorry. I think last week we popped up that balloon.
We did pop that balloon. Maybe. That's all right. I'm still waiting for Keith's solid evidence of Tennant using it as much as... Or for as, I guess I should say, for as grandiose things as Matt Smith has used. All right. Our next bit of feedback comes from Dan, and Dan sent us in some audio feedback.
Yes, he did.
Let's take a listen.
Hey, guys. This is Dan from Central Illinois. I just got done sending you feedback for the Series 7, but I forgot to mention thank you for the side trips. The ones on Star Trek and Keith's honeymoon cruise brought back a lot of memories, so... Thank you for putting those up. Those were a lot of fun. And now for the Sonic screwdrivers. And I don't know if you've already mentioned this or you're getting ready to, so I hate to steal anybody's thunder on this. Now, in the old series, before it was destroyed in the Davison episode, the Sonic screwdrivers had always been just basically remote actuators for the machines. Now, when RTD had expanded the series, he had also expanded the abilities to become the ultimate wireless mouse, able to access any computer, any operating system, blasting through whatever firewalls of security to get to the critical information, or do whatever actuation had to happen. And I was actually really okay with that. And then Moffat comes in and writes the episode, Silence in the Library, and I was definitely taken aback when the Doctor was sending Martha back via the transmat to the TARDIS. And he had said something to the point of River's song. I don't think she made it, because I would have gotten a feedback signal. And he's cramming this thing up to his ear, listening for something to come back. Okay, yeah, we could kind of take that. And then when Moffat took over the entire series, and Matt Smith had got his new sonic screwdriver, well, then that's when all the tricorder abilities came in. And I'm kind of with you guys. I can see where it moves the plot along. But it just almost puts the sonic screwdriver into a new realm. It's almost like the psychic paper. Now, in the old days, the Doctor used to spend almost an entire episode just haggling with whatever the local authority was, just to prove that he deserved to be wherever the action was going on and he could help. Well, the psychic papers helped with these little one-hour episodes to, you know, hurry that along and get him through. And again, I was taken aback a little bit when he stepped on the double-decker bus there in Planet of the Dead, holds it up to the bus pass scanner, and all of a sudden it reads its mind? That's even over the top for my taste. Fortunately, they did only do it once. Now, on a side note, Planet of the Dead, number 10 used a separate gadget on the bus to track the wormhole. Now, I've got a feeling if 11 had done it, he would have just used a sonic screwdriver to track that, but at least 11 used the reviewer mirror backpack thing to find Vincent Van Gogh's space chicken. Besides all that, I would like the sonic cane. What do you guys think? Okay, anyway, thanks again, guys, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Obviously, he sent that a couple weeks ago. I have a few things to counterpoint on his. A lot of people blame the 11th Doctor and Stephen Moffat for the invention of the sonic screwdriver.
I don't think everybody's blaming the 11th Doctor. Well, they are certainly blaming Stephen Moffat.
They're blaming Stephen Moffat as the invention of the sonic screwdriver as a tricorder. Not true at all. It actually started. There are three instances in Classic Who where it does this. Including Colony in Space, he scans alarm systems in the Master's TARDIS and reads the results. The Sea Devils. Wait. No, that's not right. Sea Devils is not right.
No, that's just a sonic device.
He just uses it as a remote detonation and detonation.
Oh, wait a minute. No, he does use it for something else than that.
Death to the Daleks, he uses it to detect and booby-trapped floor tiles.
Well, okay.
So
but,
he uses
but,
it as a scanner
no,
and tricorder.
No.
What?
I'm gonna defend the use of a scanning the floor for booby traps. Is that's using it as a tool. Not necessarily.
You're still scanning for an electronic source.
Exactly. You're scanning for an electronic source.
You're still scanning.
You're
the
not
area.
Scanning DNA or organic tissue or things like that. That's where it becomes a tricorder, where you're using it as a electronic tool or a sonic tool, where you're scanning just to find weaknesses or inconsistencies where booby traps could be. I don't think you could scan it and say, this is the type of booby trap it is. But because of a sonic bounce or a sonar, let's say, you could tell that there are weaknesses or there are electronic deviancies that could lead to being a booby trap. So I'm going to defend it there.
Dan doesn't differentiate.
No, but I'm going to say that that's not the tricorder thing that we get from Matt Smith.
And I'm going to go on record now. Yes, they use it too often.
Yay!
They use it too often for scanning.
But now my
and
point was
solution.
And hopefully you've
in from Eccleston on for solution. They've used it too often in general.
I will concur that, and I think I said that last week.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is it has been used more for different various items and different various get out of jail free cards since the 11th Doctor. That we didn't have that much going on with Eccleston and Tennant. As far as what the screwdriver could do, it still was overused. I'm concurring with you on that. It was still used as get out of situation tool.
I think the difference is,
but it suddenly has this vast Swiss Army knife feel for it that it didn't have until Moffat took over the show.
I think the difference is, oftentimes, in the last two regenerations, it didn't do what it was supposed to. It didn't find what it was supposed to. There are several instances where the doctor scans something or uses the sonic on something and it doesn't work.
Sure, and I'm okay with that. If you use it for something it's not supposed to do it and it doesn't.
But the
work.
Attempt that he tries it and it doesn't work, well, what does somebody do? He goes back and tweaks his tool so it will work. It makes sense to me.
Well, he didn't do any tweaking because the TARDIS.
That's true.
The TARDIS built this one,
which is an extension
of
the TARDIS.
And all of the other
we never saw how the other sonics were built.
Well, this is what I'm saying: is in all the other Who, it was never disclosed to us where the sonic screwdriver comes from. This particular one, though, we know the TARDIS built it, so that might set a precedent for how the other ones were created.
That's true.
But what I'm saying is, he didn't have anything to do with making it do what it needed to do.
I agree.
It's very much in the Time Lord trials when you reach a certain age and you've completed your training.
Much like building your own
lightsaber.
You
have to go out into the desert and collect crystals for the sonic screwdriver.
Actually, somewhere I read that there's a book that talks about there are crystals in the sonic screwdriver.
There was also a number of instances with Mark...
Hamill?
Five? Whatever that... Sonic is from Eccleston to...
That's five, I believe.
Five.
That was Mark Five. Yeah.
That they use it to as a tricorder, including to detect and stop telepathic signals in Rose and an empty child to act as
a
medical
scanner. Wait, to stop telepathic signals?
And to stop telepathic signals.
I don't remember that one.
I believe it was shutting down... It was...
I'll give you that one, but because I don't remember that one.
From what I remember, it's scanning the Autons to find out where they're coming from.
It shut down the
nesting consciousness.
The nesting consciousness's ability to communicate with the plastic.
Okay. And I think I've always... No, I'm not disputing that. I think I've always forgiven that one because, he uses the sonic... Anybody... They all use sonic tools as disruptors. So,
if I'm not mistaken, he uses it specifically when the signal goes out through whatever it's called, the London Eye. The space wheel.
Or not space wheel. It is the London Eye.
The Ferris wheel. Whatever it's called.
That's what I was looking for, is Ferris wheel. Sorry.
Wait, that's when he, when they start using that as a transmitter, that's when the sonic comes into play. So
if I remember correctly, he still uses it to find the signal, where it's coming from.
Again, I equate sonic device with sonar device. So when you've got something that's bouncing a signal back, I'm more forgiving about that. But yes, it lends to the fact that it's overused, standing. But I don't think it still does not defend the things that it's used for in the Matt Smith era.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying Matt Smith era is not where it started. That's my major point.
No, and I think I agreed with that.
Yes.
Again, we're on the same page.
Yes.
But yes, it's been overused since Eccleston, yes.
And the scanning, tricorders did more than biological. Am I correct,
Sean?
Yes,
they did, but what I'm saying is it
depends on the tricorder, if you want to get really technical.
Yes.
There was a standard-issue tricorder, like what Spock would carry around, and he would wave it around on a planet, and it would record, it would scan, it would... it could be used for any number of things. And then
no,
later,
it's only used for three things.
It could be used for almost any number of things. And then later, they established that Dr. McCoy had a specific, separate medical tricorder, which they then carried over into the Next Gen era,
which
had the little
still each doodin. Tricorder.
But what I'm saying is, it has the ability of a tricorder because it has multiple things, one of which being biological, which it didn't have in the Eccleston
and I agree. Which I'm just saying that's been established for a long time. My next point of scanning is Empty Child, which it acts as a medical scanner and diagnostic tool.
Where was it?
For the nanogenes.
He uses it when he's in the
You're
in the
right.
Ward
he does use it for the nanogenes.
Which
granted
is a Stephen Moffat script.
But he also scans Donna to try to figure out why she's so special in Runaway Bride.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Smith and
that
Jones.
That would be tricorder.
Smith and Jones?
That would be tricorder. I'll give
he
you that
uses
one.
It to scan hospital records to find any patient suffering from
hospital records, again, is...
That's more of an interface.
Which I have a problem with as well, but it's, interface.
In the Lazarus experiment, he scans for fluctuating DNA, specifically that of Dr. Lazarus. Professor
that's
Lazarus.
That's tricorder.
Give him that.
Silence in the Library, Force of the Dead, scanning for the shadows.
Which I'm okay with.
Which we've mentioned already. Which is also a Moffat story. And then he also uses it in the Next Doctor to scan for info stamps.
Which again is electronic, so I'm all right for that. We're looking for, again, electrical consistency.
But what Dan was bringing up was the fact that he was scanning anything and everything.
Right,
to get information of, and I'm saying that didn't start with Moffat.
No, you're right, and that's what you. And I need to stay away from what your point is. My point, though, for the last 2 weeks was there has been an ramped up, increased amount of usage of that since the Matt Smith era began. And I think you conceded that. Although you had said 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, that there was many times in Tennant's era.
I misunderstood what you were referencing.
Yeah, it did happen in Tennant's era, and I concur that. However, it's gotten worse. We've been saying all along since we've been doing
that's
this.
That's the thing.
That the sonic screwdriver was suddenly this get-out-of-jail-free card. Now, it wasn't obvious that it was used to basically resolve the plot of an episode until Power of Three, when we're on the ship and we use it in order to basically detonate the ship. I mean, that's what to cause. Actually, he used it in order to send the turn the cubes into defibrillators, which then in turn caused feedback and blew up the ship. But still, it was too quick and convenient, and that was Chris Chimble. That wasn't
even Moffat. So you can't. That's my problem. Is a lot of fans are complaining about the Sonic, blaming Moffat, blaming Eleventh Doctor.
It's on Moffat's watch. That's what they're saying. Is there? Yeah. Because if you look back at the classic era, you had people like Hinchcliffe. You had people like J&T that said, "We don't want this to be the do all fix all thing."
We don't want writers to get lazy and utilize it in order to further the plot. Now, I also agree with something that Dan brought up, was that it was a it's a convenient way to do Doctor Who in 45-minute episodes. I think Chrissy pointed this out, too.
Same way as
45-minute episodes. Paper. And, yeah, and to get to further the plot and to move it along. I think, but I guess my problem is I didn't, I kind of let it go. I tolerated it for the first, the ninth and tenth Doctor's eras, because it wasn't overused. And it just seems like here in the last two seasons with Matt Smith, it's just really become too broad, too big of a, it's almost the third companion on the ship now, is what on the TARDIS is what it's becoming. See, I don't like that. I think that loses some creativity.
To me, it's you.
Was it Dan that said you've that almost the Doctor become spent more aware most of the it. Story, trying to convince people that he could be there?
Mm-hmm.
I took issue with that because I disagree with that, because there's a lot of times I'll watch Classic Who and I think, you just took the Doctor at face value that he's who he is, and suddenly, I mean, you have to in those stories, because you can't have them, quarreling with him over whether he needs to be there or not. He has to be there in order to
but
be.
But we've also the had story, plenty of episodes like Invasion of the Dinosaurs where he gets locked up for being a looter, even though he's obviously supposed to be there.
But it's done early on, and it's once, and it's done. I mean, it's that, but.
Right, but as we've joked, how many, and I'm not talking about that, well, I'm using that episode as an example, but how many times have we said this episode could have been pared down, and it's because of silly things like that that we just, why couldn't we have just taken them at face value?
I never see them, I rarely see that. That doesn't happen that much.
Right, I can see Dan's point on that.
They can be pared down for a lot of things, and running through corridors is one of them, but not convincing people who he is.
For the same reason that I...
That's more psychic paper.
It's more psychic paper than anything, but
absolutely.
I agree with the sentiment that there are times where it's as a convenience. And that's the thing. I don't mind it. If we're going to wave the sonic paper as a convenience... the psychic paper as a convenience to get into the plot... I have zero issue with that. I have no problem. If we're going to use the sonic screwdriver as a convenience to further the plot,
yes,
I have zero issue with that. If we're going to use one of these devices as the resolution of the plot, now you're cheating.
Yeah, that's when it become very obvious.
You've just become lazy. It's like, oh, wow, look, fortunately for me, I have this tool.
Which, whether I think it's the sonic or something else. New Who, quote-unquote, doesn't do it that often.
Doesn't do what that often?
Use the sonic to resolve the issue.
No, I don't think they power, I don't, power I think three they rarely is, have with power the exception of three of power is the three. Exception. Yeah.
And there are things, regardless of how you feel about the sonic screwdriver, I think there are.
I guess you could argue that.
Here's the problem with that. Power 3, what everybody's upset about is that he waves the sonic around and he fixes whatever the problem is. Except for the fact that by what we've just discussed, that's what it would be used for. It's an actuator. It's interfacing with the computer, with an electronic device, and triggering relays to reverse polarity of something.
That's
what it would do.
Far more reasonable than some things it's been used for.
It's very much more in line with what it should be used for instead of medical scanner.
Or lighting things on fire.
Or concrete resonance.
Well, it was used as a blowtorch in, welding torch, not a blowtorch in Dominators. You guys remember that? How we flipped out over that?
That's right.
You remember that? Yeah. It was a welding torch in that. Yeah. And we all went, whoa, wait a minute, talk about overuse of the, using the sonic for what it's not intended for. It sets a precedent.
My two references were Girl in the Fireplace and Evolution, where from a distance he lit a candle or a Bunsen burner. And those are the things.
Which one is that?
Girl in the Fireplace and Evolution of the Daleks.
He lights a candle in.
And he lights a Bunsen burner. And
I don't remember the
Evolution
burner, but I specifically remember the candle going. Wait a minute! And of course, again, Moffat episode.
Well, maybe that's one of those things that he was supposed to. You know, as written, he gets up, he crosses the room, he lights the lighter, and then comes back.
I'm sure it was.
And
they went,
how much work
dude,
is that?
Pull out the sonic, scan it. We'll just move on.
I'm sure it was.
And maybe David Tennant went. That doesn't work. You can't do that. And Stephen Moffat said, you can't do that. And the director said, we're going to do that because we need to move on.
It's the whole scene with the sword wielding thug in Raiders of the Lost
Lost Ark, or as they call it now, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And Harrison Ford being too sick that day in order to do the big whip fight with the sword, and he pulls a gun out and shoots him. So,
I just think in general, people, fans are attacking the Sonic for the wrong reasons.
What are the right reasons to attack the Sonic then? Let's hear that. That
overuse.
Yeah.
Yes, agreed. I agree. Yeah. Overuse.
And that's my biggest problem.
As a tricorder.
That's my biggest problem.
But then coming out and saying, it didn't start till 11th hour. That's not true. That's not true at all.
It just got noticeable, though, then, is the problem.
That may be, but that's ignoring your history, and that's looking at everything else through a rose-tinted glass.
When have you, first of all, funny pun. Secondly, when have you ever known who fans...
Well, that's true.
To not ignore history, specifically new series fans.
Well, that's true.
Because there's a large, but I don't want to say majority, but there's a large chunk of them out there that really have these blinders on and don't consider anything prior to Eccleston in existence.
But still, they're ignoring Eccleston and Tennant at the same time.
But I think in their defense, Keith, it's because it has become more...
I agree.
Evident. It's become overused.
More
that's
of a crutch.
That's why they're hot. Because you don't until you notice something, you don't cry foul. But then, and that's what's happening now is they're crying foul because they've suddenly noticed.
But you also need to go back and look and do your research before crying foul.
Give me your 10th Doctor one too.
I don't have it. Oh, it's
here you.
It's way over there.
Well, go get it. You can't see this, but this is one of the things that I want to talk about, and I think this ties in with it from a noticeability standpoint. If we look at the first time the Sonic's used back in the Second Doctor's era, it's a pin light. It's a tiny little pin light. The toy, we're dealing with toy models here, so I'm not sure that these are all to scale, but the Third Doctor model is a fairly hefty piece of equipment, but I don't remember it honestly being that big.
Show. No, it certainly is.
But look at the...
Now, obviously, there's a chip in there.
Yeah, look at 9 and 10 as compared to Matt Smith. I mean, he's got
actually,
an extra 2 inches on
it. This is probably 9 and 10 originally before...
Well...
Hang on. Let me... If I remember my Sonic screwdriver history, you know. That toy is probably... This is the bigger one anyway.
This was the reason why, from
Partners in Crime on, the Sonic is actually bigger. Is because of this toy.
Has Matt Smith and David Tennant's face on the packaging.
It was this toy that Keith is holding was smaller. The Sonic that Tennant had was smaller than this.
Really?
And what happened was the prop was very flimsy. And they created the toy, and they, in order to account for the chip in it, in order to make it buzz and light up, they had to make the toy slightly larger than what it was. And the production crew got a hold of the toy, and they went, well, this is certainly a lot more sturdy and durable than what we're using as a prop. So they got the schematics from the toy company and made the next Sonic based on that toy. So it grew. Wait. If you look in Partners in Crime, it's a larger
screen. So does that mean the Sonic that comes with the Journal Impossible Things is actually accurate to the size? Because it seems really small.
It might be. They may have gone with the smaller size in order to...
If we assume then that the schematics for
the schematics that are used to remake the Sonic screwdriver that David Tennant uses, so it's bigger. Then you look at the Matt Smith toy, and it's got an extra inch on him anyway. And then you extend it. Even if this one's extended, I mean, it's still... The Sonic keeps getting bigger, not just in use, but in physical size.
No, because this one certainly... I mean, yes, it is bigger, but...
Extended.
I mean, I think the Mark II, which is the Third Doctor's Sonic, is even taller than this because it has a little bit of that spindly...
It could be.
I just assumed that spindly thing was this part.
I think it is.
I think it might be taller. But maybe it is.
But when this thing is fully extended with the claws out, this is a huge prop. This has become a hero prop of, like, Braveheart proportions where they give him the broadsword. this is the broadsword of Sonic Screwdrivers. I mean, this thing is freaking huge. And so not only is the Sonic getting a bigger personality, a bigger range of abilities, it's physically getting bigger. Now, having said that, from an evolution standpoint, if we look at a pin light and whatever capabilities that Sonic had to remove screws from...
It was a fairly long pin light.
Well, it was a pin light. If we look at that and the abilities that it had to the size of this monster and the abilities that it has, believe it or not, I have no problem with the fact that theoretically this can do all that. It makes sense to me as the Doctor progresses as a person, as his adventures get more and more outlandish, and he's going through these, and he's thinking to himself, man, if only I had a bioscanner. But well, they're this big, and I can't lug one of those around even in my transcendental pockets. Oh, I wonder if I could build it into the Sonic. Makes sense that he would, you know, continue to adapt this tool to become an omni-tool, that it would do all these different things that he's run into. You know, how many doors have I run into that have been locked? Well, I'll just build that functionality into it. How many times have I run into this? Well, I'll just do that.
That has been a function of the Sonic Screwdriver since Baker's era.
Right.
Baker opened a lot of doors.
But it didn't do it originally. So maybe sometime between 2 and 3, he built that functionality in, which is why it's a bigger screwdriver now.
Which,
that's a good way to...
I'm retconning. I really am.
I think in a way they did that...
Because I have a big one.
I'm blanking on the title of the episode. Night Terrors. When he's trying to scan a wood, he says, "I really need to build an app for that."
That certainly does it. That lends to what Sean's saying.
It says the doctor has modified these.
Yeah.
And doing my research,
maybe with the TARDIS's help. But
did you guys know that? We're on Mark 8, I believe.
Yeah, I came across that too. I don't believe that that's true.
I believe it. After Christmas Carol?
Between
Christmas Carol and Regeneration?
I don't believe that's true.
He needed a rebuild?
You're right in the sense that that was a rebuild. But what I'm saying is there's some fuzzy math in between because... from what I saw...
Kind of like when is the unit stories dated.
The 5th, 6th, and 7th Doctor used a Mark version that was not... That would have been the Mark 3 and not the Mark 4, as that puts forth. And then he's got a Mark 5 in there that is not the actual Mark 5. The Mark 5 would have been what the 7th Doctor and 8th Doctor use in the movie. Or Mark 4 would have been what...
Mark... changes twice.
Exactly, because it becomes larger, they say. It's destroyed in Smith and Jones.
More than anything, it gets destroyed.
It's broken.
Yes.
In Smith and Jones. But no, I think the numbers are wrong. I looked at that as well, and I was going, I don't think we're on 8. I think we've added a couple of numbers in there that are non-existent.
Well, it depends on if you count it as a redesign or as a rebuild.
No, I would... Even a redesign is a new mark.
A redesign would be a new mark.
Yeah.
A rebuild? No.
But what I'm saying is that where it doesn't work is where in the classic era where he didn't have the Sonic Screwdriver, they've added two marks in it.
Hang on. But are we counting the fact that we didn't have a Sonic and then Doctor Who the movie, he has this Sonic. So that's now all of a sudden a new mark, even though it's kind of very similarly based.
Repainted. Because it's different, yes.
And then,
that's a new mark.
Do we now count the new Paul McGann one that so far has only...
I don't think Ricky does.
That's only been exhibited in Big Finish. But
the person that put this together does not count that one. However, I think when you go in, when that becomes part of the continuity, which when it releases, it does, in my mind, then you can add that mark on. But based on the research that I think
regardless,
it doesn't work that way.
And just to be nitpicky.
10 Sonic gets rebuilt, when 11th Sonic gets rebuilt, that makes a new mark.
Just to be nitpicky,
I would agree.
If you're talking a rebuild versus a quote-unquote refit... They refit the Enterprise in Star Trek the Motion Picture, which pretty much amounted to a complete rebuild and didn't renumber it. It's still Enterprise. It's not until much later that
that's Star Trek,
up,
but we're talking...
And it's an A.
Yeah, well,
I'm just throwing that out there to be
Star Trek.
Which really only fans have given marks to the Sonic.
Well, yeah, I don't think the Doctor's ever marked them.
K-9, on the other hand, has been marked.
Yes, that's
true. But that's always been a rebuild, too, or an entirely different dog.
So, I think it's going to surprise you guys that I agree. I think it's being used too much, and not necessarily for what it's intended. But my complaint stems more from the cure-all. You know,
I don't think it's used that much.
I agree with that. I think it's a cure-all thing.
I don't necessarily mind. The more I think about it, because I was totally against it. I was like, why is it scanning people? That's just wrong. Why is it doing this? That's wrong. It shouldn't do that. But the more I thought about it, the more I decided that I'm okay with that, that the doctor would build more functionality into it. That makes sense to me. But when get out of the problem, when we've solved the plot with it all of a sudden by waving it around, it's kind of, and even Christmas Carol, even though that was used for the purpose it should have been used for.
Yes. Here's the thing. I think
you're not used to it being even used early, for the purpose it's used for.
And I understand the idea of it being used in order to speed up the plot for a 45. There are times, and I wish I could think of something, there are times that I feel that it's been used to speed the plot early on, even up too fast, in order to get us going. And I think that's when it's overused as well. So I go back to the idea, it feels overused. It feels like it's being used too much to as service to the story, and it shouldn't be doing that.
And I would concede a lot of it, most of the time it's being overused. I think fans are crying foul over things that...
Well, I would agree. I think fans holler a lot louder than we do on the Sonic.
That's true.
We certainly have never... Until a couple of weeks ago. We haven't really hollered much about the Sonic. We've said, maybe it's a little bit too much, but it wasn't until recently we were coming up on this that we kind of really spoke out that... And it wasn't until Power 3 that I really went, okay, that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
It still gives us very cool toys to play with.
Anyway, one thing I wanted to mention... That's excellent. I still love it. One thing I want to mention is... even though we're not talking psychic paper, this is Sonic Screwdriver. Back on the note of the psychic paper. The psychic paper, if you've noticed, because I've been going back watching with Holly, catching her up, the psychic paper has been used less and less and less and less. In fact,
I would agree.
Did we see the psychic paper at all this season?
No.
Did we see it much last season?
Maybe twice.
We saw it. I think the last time I remembered seeing it was in that episode of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Where he shows it to young... I can't remember the character's name.
I'm a responsible adult. It's just a bunch of wavy lines.
It's just a bunch of wavy lines. Oh, finally a lie that's too big.
Well, they discuss it in Good Man Goes to War, but we never see
it. That's right. They do discuss it in there.
And who was it?
It's Rory using it He uses it to get into prison.
Who sent him?
I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of the two Marines training.
Oh, that's right.
Who sent him a message on the paper? That was just recently. I thought it was this season.
It wasn't this season.
I thought it was that he got a message on his Sonic paper and he commented that Oswin.
Oh, the distress signal. She did send it on the comments.
The distress signal showed up against Stephen Moffat.
But Moffat did not introduce the Sonic paper. That was Russell T. Davis.
RTD. Yep.
So I don't know anything. What else do you guys want to talk about these Sonic Screwdriver? I mean. I think the Doctor needs something. He needs something, but I don't think he needs a broadsword. And if they ever use it as a weapon, I mean, it's been used in conjunction as a weapon.
When it becomes pointed
at somebody and zap them and they die. I mean, I showed you guys before the show the really clever short film that somebody put together called The Sonic Screwdriver. And basically the tagline is why it's been banned from action movies since 1963. And we'll put a link in the show for those of you that want to watch it.
As much as I love the episode, closing time is when the Sonic has the biggest issue for me. When it's zapping the Cybermat and you see the ray going.
Oh, you actually see the ray? I didn't remember.
I don't remember seeing a ray. Yeah.
I remember seeing a ray.
I remember him using it to zap not only Cybermats, but Cybermen.
Yeah, I remember that too.
That I didn't like that.
Again,
about
though,
the story.
Then it's a sonic disruptor. It's disrupting.
Yeah, but
it's disrupting the electronics.
The problem is, which I agree that should be.
I don't
use
think
of it
should happen. But.
That's just it. fundamentally, the logic of
again,
being able to
weapon
do that makes sense. But now all of a sudden, if the sonic has that capability.
Why aren't we zapping Daleks? Why aren't
Daleks,
we zapping,
Cybermen, yeah, any Cybermen, kind of robotic cybernetic life form ought to be susceptible
which
to it.
Which he did use it to reverse the mechanics.
Polarity of the neutron flow?
Possibly. The mechanics of the Dalek in Asylum.
He used the sonic to put it in reverse. Yeah.
But at the very least...
to me, he might have been in there turning a screw, though.
At the very least, he cracked open the case to get
it. Yeah,
exactly.
It wasn't just pointing it at it and magic happened. It was opening the top and then doing a little circling motion inside.
going back to the psychic paper, it was Kate Stewart that used it.
Yeah,
Kate used it to send him a message,
and that's why he was impressed. I had a... I can't find it now. I was hoping that we could actually get an interview with him, and unfortunately, I'll be honest, it's my fault. I didn't do my homework this week to get this done.
Last week.
We had a possibility of interviewing a gentleman who does custom built sonic screwdrivers, and I don't know how familiar any of you are with the Master Replicas line of Star Wars lightsabers that they've put out. But these are the ones that are very nice polished metal that just gleam chrome and brass, and they're
very heavy duty.
They're very heavy duty, and they're gorgeous. It's almost one of those things that's more of a display piece than I'm going to clip this to my belt and carry it around with me because
not really even a cosplay piece.
Well, no, I mean, really they're heavy. I mean, it's solid metal, so you pick this thing up and you know you're dealing with a thing. But this guy does kind of the same deal. He does these prop reproductions, but he does sonic screwdrivers. And because it's a custom job, you can have it look pretty much however you want. It doesn't have to be based on any one specific model. You can just do with it. And I was hoping that we'd be able to talk with him, and one of the issues that I'm having is I can't locate his website anymore.
Uh-oh.
I know I have an email from him, but I don't know what happened to his website. I've been unable to find it, so I don't know if it's
that,
just
if you
I'm
get that get that to
what.
Me and then I'll try and put that in the show notes,
but I will try and get that to you guys so that you have it, because they're beautiful pieces, and I actually looked into possibly having one done. And if any of you are looking for Christmas presents for me.
Was there anything else we want to talk about on the sonic screwdriver that we didn't cover? Sorry, Chrissy, that Keith and I didn't have the epic battle that I think you expected. I hope you enjoyed the popcorn.
It was more of a misunderstanding than anything else.
Dan, thank you so much for the feedback on the sonic, and I'm glad we were able to hold on to it and run it in this show.
Yes.
I have lots to talk about on the sonic.
We'll keep it coming.
Okay. It's too much.
All right. What's on the next schedule next week, Sean?
It's very sonic.
What do we got coming up that I'm a whole week behind on right now?
Sonics are cool.
But I meant to get one listen to at least this week that I didn't.
You didn't.
Me too.
It's coming up on the schedule, Sean, that I'm going to have to cram into
coming
one
up
week.
On the schedule. All three of them.
8 hours. In 1 week. I'm going to have to call in sick Monday.
You better not.
Let's listen to him at work.
I wish I could.
Oh, sure. Just wait till the news is on, and you can do it then.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a half hour,
Exactly. No, I get an hour on that one. At least
an hour and a half.
You get two shows. You know.
Three shows.
Okay, well, there you go. It's an hour and a half. That's one episode. Almost.
Almost.
next week on the schedule, and I'll one other brief moment. If any of you have thoughts that you're like, but you didn't talk about this,
yeah, throw us an email.
Throw us, you know, we get scatterbrained. So shoot us an email, shoot us some feedback, and you can do that through our website, which is travelingvortex.com. Click on the contact us page, and there's a feedback link there, and usually it works.
Mostly.
It works. Mostly. Next week for Friday Night Who on October 12th. We're doing William Hartnell and The Rescue, which is it's the first one with Vicky, right? And that's who they're rescuing.
Wasn't Vicky in Time Mother?
No.
Who was that?
Stephen and
Polly.
No,
not Polly.
It wasn't Polly. Shoot.
No, that sounds right.
Dodo. No.
No, Dodo was Gunfighters.
Dodo was Gunfighters.
Maybe it was I don't know. I don't recall.
Maybe it was Vicky. Maybe we watched that out of order. Well, we did watch it out of order, obviously, but
clearly.
We wouldn't be traveling the Vortex if we did it in order.
Anyway, Vicky's in it.
So I'm pretty sure it's the first one with Vicky. So we'll do the rescue with William Hartnell. And
she stows away.
It's her
rescuer.
It's her
she
first away. Well, but actual no episode.
Spoilers.
Yes, it is Vicky's first episode. Sorry.
It's Vicky's first episode.
Yes. Go on.
But not my first exposure to
that's
her.
But not, no, that no, no, not exactly your first exposure. Is Ty Metzler is your first exposure. This is her first episode.
Okay, don't confuse me.
Move along.
Baby, it is 110 degrees out here. I'm just repeating what I thought I heard the man say. Of course those are the droids I'm looking for. You think I'm going to report that? No. I just watched that recently. We won't be reviewing the rescue on the show next week because, as Glenn pointed out, he's got a lot of homework to do. He's got three Paul McGann, and so do you, audio adventures to listen to if you're keeping track at home. We're doing the next three for the listener. We're doing the next three in the McGann part of the mainline series. So it's Paul McGann in number 31, Embrace the Darkness. Number 32, The Time of the Daleks. And number 33,
finally,
Neverland.
We've been
leading up to. Of all of them, Embrace is the one I don't remember.
Well, that you're going to say that you like the best. I mean, review it next week.
I don't remember that one at all. All right. So I'm going back to re-listen to that one at least.
So we'll do those. And then the following week for Friday Night Who, we will do The Romans, which is the other part of the DVD box, because it's a two-disc set. With Wayne Martin, we'll discuss both of those stories in episode 95. And should I spring it? It's already up on the website, so you press not really a surprise.
Spring it.
Our Halloween episode for this year.
That springs. The Sonic does springs now.
It's like Tigger.
Oh, the wonderful thing about Sonics. Sonics are wonderful things. Tops are made out of rubber.
The bottom of the spring.
What's the wonderful thing about Sonics is I'm not the only one.
Well, we've only...
What's not? Romana's got one.
Rivers got one.
Yeah, three.
All the doctors have one.
Yeah, but it's the same. But you can assume it's the same one evolved for all the doctors.
No, because they're different marks.
But if there was ever a multi-doctor story where something happened and they all had to... Oh, my God.
That hasn't happened yet.
That's what Moffat's going to do for the 50th. He's going to do this big, epic multi-doctor story, and it's going to require the Sonic, but it's not powerful enough. So they all have to pull them out and use them at the same time.
Ones we've never seen use them.
Yeah. Our Halloween episode, last year we did... We did a threefer. We did three of the horror ones. We're kind of... doing something different this year, but still is scary. Still a Tom Baker.
These are all in the Hinchcliffe there.
Yeah.
Hinchcliffe area.
Who's going to be at Galley? Do you have your tickets yet?
Hinchcliffe. I do have my tickets.
Good.
We've talked about this.
I know. I was throwing that out there for the listeners' benefit. Boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I have my tickets.
Thank
you. Keith does not have his tickets.
I do not.
Only 300 left. Ish.
He decided he can't go this time because financial constraints.
October 26th, which is not Halloween, but it's the Sunday before, so that's when we're doing it. The Talons of Wen Chiang.
Yeah.
Finally!
And you might be surprised to hear Sean and my review of this one.
The classic.
You know, I kind of hope I come down on the side of fandom.
Counted on many top five lists. Talons of Wen Chiang.
I'm looking forward to it, quite honestly. We've been... Dude, don't diss the Sonic.
Sorry.
Don't drop the Sonic.
We'll have to make a Mark 7.
We've mentioned before that
10.
You and I are both not really huge fans of it.
That's not exact. No, that's right.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to rewatching it because it's been so long. I'm almost hoping that I'm wrong. I'm almost hoping that maybe I'll go into it with different eyes this time out and go, oh, this is what everybody was talking about. And I'll be really curious to know Keith's reaction. So,
I kind of hope I'm on the side of fandom, and so we have more to talk about that week.
He's already going to love the big giant rat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Ben. He's going to be all over Ben. And then we're going to devote a whole episode to Talons of Wen Chiang. So that'll make up for the fact that you had to slog through 8 hours of Paul McGann, man.
Oh, it's not slogging through.
It's enjoyable.
I'm not saying I'm not saying I'm
we just didn't start it as soon as
I
we should have started.
I'm going to be cramming for Paul McGann.
I gave you 3 weeks' notice.
Good thing I gave you the great way to listen and kill time at home.
That's right. Yeah. That's true.
And then after that, Ambassadors of Death comes out on DVD, so we're going to hit that one. We'll probably be a little late with our review of
that one.
But we're going to do Ambassadors of Death, and then...
Canine.
Ooh!
Did you hear me? I said canine.
You know?
Keith heard you. he squeed a little bit there.
I'd rather trade in all three of my Sonics for a life-size canine.
Oh,
dude, if I had a life-size remote control canine, I would take it for walks in the park. I would put a leash on it, and one of the retractable leashes,
right,
and I would
talk
walk
about
it to
canine
the park.
In a later date.
That's how cool a canine would be.
You can share your unhealthy obsessions later.
I would jealous of my bobblehead. You know it.
Yes.
If I was more talented, not only would I have the remote control full size canine, I would build a robotic cat to put in a tree that he could bark at. That's how much I love.
That's gonna do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith. Be seeing you.
Good night, everybody.
Cheers.
That's out of order.
Boomerang. Boomerang.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.
Two. One. We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex. I landed an episode. Three. Two. One. We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 93. And why are humans so... this is a tough word. Three.
Parochial.
Yes. Three, two, one. We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 93. And why are humans so parochial? That wasn't right either. Parochial.
Try procreative. I want to hear you say that one.
Procreative, I can say. That's what I'm turning it into. Do we remember what he said when the Sonic was destroyed?
I feel like I've just lost an old friend.
Yeah.
I'll say that instead. Three.
You are so wishy-washy.
No, he just doesn't want to say parochial.
Yeah. Parochial.
Parochial podcasters.
There's your title. Three,
not
two.
If you don't use it.
Three, two, one. We've joined the doc. Three, two.
Wait.
He's fixed.
Three, two, one. We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 93. And I feel Three, two, one. We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 93. And I feel as if you've just killed an old friend. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean. And I'm Glenn. And you're still muted.
I'm still muted.
We started.
Hang on. Ready? I'm Sean. And you just go and cut that
nope.
back in later.
Keith's got to do it again.
I'm...
I was surprised you guys didn't do anything with the Sonics.
Well,
we were ready an hour ago.
We were. First 30 takes.
This episode of Traveling the Vortex is simulcast in Sonic. We do the whole episode like this. Thus concludes our broadcasting day.